I discovered that Bobby had been writing poems about some paintings I made in the 60s. She didn't tell me about this, but she gets up in the morning with her coffee, and unlike Holden, where you got to dash through the meal, she lingers on the couch for hours, sitting.
I have a job now.
She has a job now, so she can't do that. But she sits and writes in these secretarial books, and I'm not allowed to peek at them, so I didn't know what she was doing. And one day I discovered some very interesting responses to some of my paintings. So I'm going to show some slides. I might make a few silly remarks about the painting, and then it will be followed by her response to the painting. I think we have 12 paintings, and I think they're from about 1960 up into the mid-70s. I think there's one example from 1980. So these are not recent works. I think I'll just start. We put the Morning Glory on there because we always plant some Morning Glories by the yard light pole at the front door. We didn't get to see any this year. We hope that it's growing when we get home, but we just found out that out here they grow wild. In Minnesota, you really have to pray about it to get one of these things to happen. But we have other things that grow there, like mosquitoes and flies, and it's a wonderful state, and icicles. This is not the painting that she wrote about, but there were, in the winter of 64, we had an unusually heavy snowfall. And for Minnesota, that means maybe an accumulation of 40, or where I live, 40 or 50 inches, which is a lot for southeastern Minnesota. And I call this painting The Meager Moon. There's a glare right in the middle there from the photography, so it's not quite, there's a slight distortion, but I kept looking at the woods and it was so frozen and so cold. But we were pasturing Angus cattle that winter. Somebody was using our barn. And I saw these black Angus standing out there against those black trees, and I thought they must be really cold. I know they aren't, but I made a painting called Cold Cows. And Bobby wrote a painting called Cold Cows, and if you could imagine some black Angus walking around there in the snow against those black trees.
The cows are speaking. Are you the same moon that caresses our spirits as we wade through the fragrance of our clovers and grasses, knee-deep in swirling mists on a mystical summer's night? Surely you have more to offer us than this icy wind and that faint veiled glow. Or are you sent simply to fan the embers of that dim memory of summer opulence, nursing calves and all of nature's wasteful bounty? Wait, wait, the wind wails. Our time will come again, comes the response from deep within us. All things must rest, trees, earth, cows. The air itself cannot be the bearer of so much midnight fragrance, so many satisfied desires. It must be driven over the snows and cleansed, strained through bare branches and purified by countless frozen nights, to be returned virgin and suppliant to waft beneath another summer moon.
I was doing some addition to our house, and I was using limestone, building a huge fireplace mass, and I dropped a major pile of rocks on one foot and wrecked my ankle, so I had to sit for a week. And I sat along the edge of the woods where I stopped mowing the grass and the weeds start coming in. And I made a lot of drawings of the weeds and plants and mosquitoes that were growing at that point. And I did a series of paintings called Edge of the Woods. Edge of the Woods.
Here, if any place, we have met and been one. Here where the wild meets the ordinary, our spirits have become entwined. And here where summer's life has known the death touch of fall's renunciation, we have denied the life in one another and sent it alone into winter's chill. But in the same way that Christ's wounds have made all new life possible, So the pain of living through one another's rejections makes possible springs blooming in us and binds us together more irrevocably in his body. At the edge of the woods where the untamed spirit embraces well-ordered reason, here, if any place, we have been one.
It's really nice to have somebody come along and make these things mean so much. The technique there was to make very precise drawings, and then I started washing arbitrary colors into them because it just seemed so fantastic. This is my sacred mountain, my Mount Tabor, my holy place. It's a little knob on our farm. We live on kind of a miserable 80 acres, but it's very pretty. It's rocky, sandy, woody, marshy, but not very good tillable land. And I can't come out here to get away from it all, so I have my little place to go and sit. And I sometimes read blue books up here, test papers. And when I go up there, I feel good and everybody gets an A. But I've done a lot of paintings of that spot. There must have been a lake there once upon a time, and there are little cedars coming and these little flowers and plants. Bobby gave it a title that I didn't really know what to call it. It was my special place.
And I call it Laughing Place. This is a favorite place, a laughing place, which can also be a place for crying when crying is appropriate, a place where words flow, colors pour forth, where wind makes tree music, and we may sing along or we may be silent and merely listen. Sometimes it is important to have a place just to be, where nothing depends on us, but we can always depend on the place.
Exactly what I had in mind. These outlaws, on the left is Tom. He's a graphic designer in Hong Kong now. And in the middle is Eric. He's been teaching sculpture at St. Olaf. And on the right is Son John, who's in advertising in Minneapolis. And they're also artists, as you can see on their trick-or-treat bag.
I should hope you can tell.
We survived four sons, partly by coming out here and living for a year, where everybody else got to take care of them, like we're all taking care of everybody else's children this week. But sometimes when the battle was over, they had to watch Gunsmoke. I don't know if you remember that old TV show. But that's Eric and John and Tom, and they are all sitting in this ancient chair upstairs glued to Gunsmoke. And I made this very quick drawing. It's just sort of an oil sketch of these mobsters.
Quiet at last, transfixed by the tube. What's to become of this brawling house full of boys? How are they to be tamed? Will bedlam and BB guns ever give way to sanity and civilization? How will the fascination for mud and noise and junk ever evolve into life work? Lord, you made them. They're all yours. It's up to you to make something of this brawling house full of boys.
They're not bad. Let's see, that winter that I painted the cold cows, we seem to have a blizzard every week. And blizzards are dangerous in the Midwest. And I knew the mailman couldn't possibly deliver the mail that day, but I thought it'd be fun to go out and see if I could survive the blizzard. And our driveway is about an eighth of a mile long, so I walked down to the mailbox and looked at the windbreak at the end of the road. And all I could see were these white stinging lines of ice hitting my face, and then there was just this strange mass of black lines. Let's see, for a while, this painting resided in South Africa. And to remind somebody who went to South Africa what paradise is really like, Minnesota blizzard. Cold trees, no.
Winter trees.
Winter trees.
How do you call forth the tree? When it has relinquished its life and has accepted its death to lie deep and buried in Earth's protective shell, does it hear my feeble death-defiant call that refuses to die because it is winter? Does it hear me insist on life and meaning when dead leaves rustle to the tune of hollow winds? Does it hear me call forth growth and blossoms, leaves and seeds when sap slumbers under silent snow? No, it hears only its Creator's voice, answers only His commands to be, to live, send forth shoots and bear fruit in due season. Thank God the tree does not recognize my voice, for what do I know of hiddenness from which its soul dreams its tomorrows into being?
I should lower that. This is, I made a drawing for a bulletin cover for church at school. We have a student congregation. I made a drawing for Palm Sunday of Christ's triumphal entry into Jerusalem.
Can I get it for you here?
Yes, I think if you just set it on the back lip there. Good.
You want that permanently or just
yes.
This picture?
Let's try it permanently.
Still isn't good.
That's okay.
That's all right. Let's see, there's a very large Christ figure and a very small animal carrying this figure. The slide has deteriorated, but when it was in better condition, there was more space here. This really recedes, and I put this heavy red line in to pull the space forward. And I was thinking of the space in terms of time. This is the past and this is the future. And at the beginning of Passion Week, Christ is in a sense caught in a very painful situation between the past, between the tradition and the future that he must face. Those are the kinds of things I was thinking about when I gave the drawing to the student pastor. He said, "This is your king?" He said he was going to preach on "This is your king." I think he did really want to accept my drawing, but he went ahead and printed it, and then I made a painting after that.
It's called Triumphal Entry. There he sits, our Savior, jogging toward death on a donkey. Funny how he's come full circle. A donkey took him into Egypt, fleeing death as a babe, and now brings him right to Jerusalem, where the crossmaker is already hard at work on next week's special. 3 for the price of 1. 1 pays for all. Thanks for making that trip for me. Thanks for bringing us all out of Egypt with you.
I think these sessions on her couch in the morning are very productive. It's a very interesting way to pray. This is called I Am, and I was teaching a Sunday school class, and we were studying John, and we've been working on all of the I Ams. It's a rather archaic image. It really is a very old-fashioned kind of medieval Christ against that nimbus in the back, that symbol of glory. But I was trying to show a seated figure, which is a figure of authority, and the chair or the throne is on the orb of the earth. And I was trying to talk about Good Friday on the left with that opaque black shape, and then that looser, airy kind of color on the right is Easter. And I was trying to show the wounds of the Passion. I Am. Incidentally, this painting was poorly crafted and it fell apart. The church bought it, and I'm embarrassed. But it actually fell apart. I'm not sure why. So,
I am your Father. You are my child. I am your Savior. You are my rescued one. I am your protector. You are safe in me. I am the mighty one of God, sent to be all of these to you. All I ask of you is your love. Can you not love your Creator, who sent each one a brother? The one who gave up all that you might live. Can you not love to obey one who would lead you into deeper fellowship with me? I am patient. I can wait forever, but you do not have forever. You only think you have. Yield up to me today that treasure that you prize above me, and I will give you back priceless bits of myself that will enrich your spirit beyond all that you could dream. Give up that faded evidence of some past victory, the memory of some long ago ambition, and I will pour my love into that empty place, and it will be with you today, warm and real and alive. Do not shrink from my demands, for I am the kindest, most gentle master you will ever have. I am a humble servant, and I am with every breath that you draw.
I think this painting was about 1961, if I remember right. There is a shift in point of view. There was a series of landscape paintings, very realistic landscape paintings, and little by little they became more abstract, but I think there's still the flat, undulating shapes of southeastern Minnesota. I call this earth, air, fire, and water.
When the eyes of the Lord ranged to and fro over the black void, he raised his voice and the earth melted into his footstool. When the air was filled with light, which is the glory of the Lord, the crown was bestowed upon his new-made creation to bless it. When he added to that firmament fire to herald his presence and water to bring abundant life, then was his creation made whole, earth, air, fire, and water, these four, signs of his sovereignty, measures of his mercifulness, fierce fury and quiet delight of his many-sided love, out of which each one of us was wrought.
I call this concerto grosso, which is a musical form in which a number of voices speak very clearly. And this is a very simple composition of forms which are all parallel with a picture plane, and they're all overlapping each other. And I started out in the background with gray forms, and then went into the blue forms and the green forms, and then I added this row of red shapes. And that's not Chinese writing. It's not clothes hanging on the clothesline. It's just a bunch of red shapes hanging against that environment. And I...
Collage?
No, it's paint. It's all painted. But the colors are so strong that this thing really pops off the background. I knew it would. I just couldn't wait till I could put the red in. It was the last thing. And Bobby called it primordial music.
Here the shadow is foremost. It carries the tune and the colors all dance to its rhythm. Ah, to bear a shadow so proudly, could we but lift our own shadows to their brilliant heights, rather than allow them to pull us into their own undiscovered depths, then would our whole being sing with life and brilliance, as do these glowing colors, then would they fill us with primordial music.
I think I might have made that painting, I think I made the drawing for the painting while being out here at Holden. This must be 1971. And I think I made the drawing at a music listening session we had at Werner Jansen, the business manager, at his house one night. And we weren't allowed to talk. It was very serious listening. And I think I sat and made this drawing at that time and then painted it when I got home. This is called The Wind. And I guess that's all I'll say about it.
Without the wind, the sea would be silent. It could not speak to the trees on the shore, and they could not whisper their response. My life lies useless and inert next to my brother's, Lord, until the wind of your spirit translates our confused words into the language of your love.
What medium is that?
Acrylic.
I think it's acrylic. No, I think it's oil paint and varnish, transparent oil washes. I think I started out with carbon to make the lines, and then I put varnish over that, and then put oil glazes over that, and then some opaque areas. There was a series of paintings about the wind, just small abstract paintings about some kind of motion or movement. This is not the work that Bobby wrote a poem about, but it was similar, and I think this also has something to do with being out here. These are rock forms. It has something to do with listening to Larry Collins talk about the dynamics of making mountains, about geology, all the kind of energy that you sense. This place is alive. You hear the glaciers creaking. You hear the mountains throwing down rocks. It's not over. It's still happening. And so I made a series of paintings that I think owe a great debt to being around Larry Collins a lot. And Bobby wrote something called Orange Spaces.
Actually, Red Orange.
Red Orange Spaces, yes.
Fire and reflections of fire. 10 sunsets exploding over a silent sea, reflected to explode again around 180 degrees of sky, proclaiming day's end, daring night to match its magnificence, but losing all in the explosion, so that night's only necessity is to be.
We make a lot of things at Holden, and then next year somebody else comes along and moves it all out. That's the exciting thing about this place. It's constantly changes. Well, there used to be a tradition of volleyball at 6:30, and I don't like to play volleyball. I smash my fingers. I'm just a klutz. So we started an alternative to volleyball called Jogging the Imagination, and we would sit around in here and talk art nonsense. So one day I found these rods up at the mill, and I welded this piece. It's about 12 feet tall, and brought it down here for a conversation. I remember one person said, "That's a bunch of baloney." And so we figured out that he was calling me baloney. And he wasn't sure if that's what he was trying to say. Anyway, I called it Lord of the Dance. I think I was singing it while I was welding it. And some of these rhythms, I wish you could see it vertically. This is looking up through it. But it was sort of a line dancing against the sky. And we mounted it on top of about a 10-foot log, so it was quite a huge tower that stood out here by the water fountain.
Lord of the Dance. Lord, you made your creation to dance. You made us to sing and shout and celebrate your creation. You said, make babies and love them into themselves. You gave us kitchens and said, bake something beautiful. You gave us gardens and said, grow a masterpiece. You spread out the fields before us and said, perform a miracle, feed the world. To the ocean you said, rejoice in your wateriness, and the sky spun itself into endless poems to the sun and the moon and the earth, and to you who created them. Every earthly creature rises up to do you honor by being what you made it to be. Let us likewise praise you by showing forth your image.
When are you going to talk about this one?
The last thing. Okay.
This is called inging, I-N-G-I-N-G. It's a word I made up. I sat in this room and listened to all this heavy theology talk and saving the world talk, and I just got fed up with sitting around talking. So I decided we should do something, and I didn't know what we should do. I just said, let's go inging. And it was just to go outside and just move around a little bit, because it was getting awfully heavy in this room. And I think this painting is pure therapy. I just started with these ribbons of color kind of dancing in the wind. And I put it layers and layers and layers of this kind of activity. And I like this painting a lot. I don't always think what I do is all that important, but every once in a while something really clicks. And this one was really fun, and I think it was an important thing to talk about. Whatever it is I'm trying to talk about, I don't know what that word means.
I call my poem Speaking in Lines. I will wager this says as much as I say in a whole morning of prayer. If I knew what I said then, I would require you to tell me from whence comes all this gibberish. Don't ask me, and I won't ask you. The important thing is that God knows and understands.
So, that legitimized this. I'm not so sure about speaking in tongues, but I do know about speaking in colors or lines. I think it's the same thing. This is called 75 floating blue spaces. And there actually are 75 shapes in there. And each one of them is painted with a slightly different blue. And they're floating forms. I guess floating in ecstasy is some kind of dream image or kind of archetypal experience. But there are a lot of paintings about floating things. Maybe it has something to do with being out here and being on top of a mountain and being kind of nervous about all that space around you.
Paint me a blue picture. Give me the blue of a cascade sky, deep blue of a mountain midnight, gentian blue gleaned from an alpine meadow, blue misty mornings and roaring blue of tumbling waterfalls, blowing across mountainsides into blue fathoms of cloudy blue-green glacial lakes. Oh, there are so many ways to be blue. If I were a painter, it would take two lifetimes to paint blue.
It's really true. You can get an awful lot out of blue, but the other colors are much more, they're harder. Let's see, what's the word I'm looking for? This is called the crown. And let's see, our church bought this painting. It's a crown of thorns. Our church bought this painting for not very much money, but it cost the church a real bundle because somebody decided we had to have a new carpet to go with the painting. Then we had to throw out the couch. And pretty soon we paneled the wall and got new lighting fixtures, and I think it ended up costing about $12,000. It's a scandal. And I feel terrible about this. I think the person who made the altar in the center, Arnold Plotin, who carved around that altar, I think the last carving he did was a piece that went underneath this on a fireplace mantelpiece that said, it's from the hymn, "The head that once was crowned with thorns is crowned with glory now." And he was in the last days of terminal cancer, and his bones were very brittle, and he broke some ribs while he was chiseling. But he wanted to finish that line that went underneath that painting. So he was my teacher, and I worked with him, so it meant a lot to me to have him do that piece.
Blood. Mystery ingredient of all your miraculous creation, yet it was not your magic blood seeping out of thorn wounds, dripping from nail holes that killed you, Lord. I know what it was and what continues to do it as long as humankind draws breath. It is my deceitfulness, my failure to love and cry with you that murders you over and over. This is a picture of what my hidden thoughts have done to another and continue to do even today. Reach down your bloody hand, O Christ. I need a precious drop to burn away hatefulness and malice, a drop here on heart and head, and a drop for good measure to mingle with my own, O Lord. Let us be blood brother and sister forever.
I didn't paint this. I think son Rolf was on St. Olaf's Global Semester, which is a 5-month program that goes around the world, and this was on the Sea of Galilee. And Bobby wrote a response to this photograph.
And it's for Helen Caldicott. All that first day they were together, Adam showed Eve the garden. Wasn't this flower lovely? Its fragrance and delicate bloom delighted her. They walked beside a bubbling brook, watched birds and fish dart through air and water. At the end of that first day, they lay on a hillside carpeted with flowers, and Adam said, "Now comes the best surprise of all. They watched as the sun slid with a profusion of red gold glory over the edge of the horizon. Eve gasped with wonder, "Where has it gone?" Adam answered, "It's another one of God's mysteries. There are many, but it will come back over there tomorrow." And he pointed in the opposite direction. Eve exclaimed in amazement, "How can it be?" "I'm sure I watched the sunset today with some of the same wonder Eve felt that first day. Each evening it seems nature outdoes itself to splash more splendor across the skies." But where Eve waited in innocent anticipation to see Adam's prediction come true, for me there is a gnawing uncertainty with each passing day. Oh, there will be sunrises and sunsets all right, but will there be eyes to see?
The last three spring breaks, we've been hiking in Utah, in some of the canyon country, in Grand Gulch Primitive Area. This year we were in the maze of the canyonlands. And the year before, we hiked down one canyon and then a week down the Escalante River in southeastern Utah. And this is Escalante. This is not a literal painting of a canyon in Utah, but if some of you have been there, you know the colors, you know the shapes, the rhythms. The painting is a little bit larger than the image on the screen.
What a surprise for you, Escalante, when your sand dunes froze, preserving a day's ripples.
1 second.
What?
There's one detail in this poem that might escape you. We were watching for Halley's Comet camped one night. We got up at dawn, and it took a lot of faith to believe that that fuzzy little cotton ball out there was something really special. But this appears in this statement.
What a surprise for you, Escalante, when your sand dunes froze, preserving a day's ripples and wind patterns for eternity. What a surprise when your trees turned to stone, when deep layers of your wind gate foundations tipped on edge and stayed that way, exposing your secrets to Earth's scrutiny. Your wild red surfaces accepted desert varnish, a lacy patina. Escalante, you surprise us. Blue water turned to red gold, sun dipping discreetly behind your mock city skyline, inhabited by Miocene cutouts of ancient animal-mammal kind. You have stood watch over peoples formed from your clay cliffs, basket makers, Anasazi, Pueblo. In their legends, were there tales of the comet we look for tonight? Look for but barely see. Escalante, did you see it in one of its grander forms on a night when it marked the place of a baby's birth? Did you have a rock chorus that night to celebrate its coming? And was that Anasazi baby named Star of the Morning because it was born as the comet passed by?
You didn't stumble.
Couldn't see it. Have to turn the light on.
The response here is not really related to this painting, but her response is really terrific. This is an 18-foot long painting I made for the lobby of the Baldwin Community Medical Center in Rochester, Minnesota. It's a gray concrete building, and it's colorless. And a lobby is a place where there can be a lot of noise and activity because you just pass through it. And I got a commission to make a painting for that space. So this is 5 by 18 feet. I set up this painting in my barn, and it was fun to walk back and forth and make these big gestures. I still was thinking about that sculpture I made for here called Lord of the Dance, or the Dance of Life, I guess I was thinking. But maybe that's just a rationale for making some big jumping, swinging shapes. It's a very tedious painting. It's covered. Let's see, I made the painting and then I covered it with those tiny stripes, the whole 18 feet of it. And I thought maybe I ought to go see somebody about my problem after I finish. This is not exactly about this painting, but it's a good poem.
But you saw some of John's earlier paintings and the sorts of subject matter, and this is the response he gets with every new exhibit. The artist speaks. Lord, when a person doesn't understand a piece of art, why does he expect me to explain it to him? I have done what I could with what I found buried deep inside myself. If it strikes a chord of recognition in him, let him celebrate the coincidence. But if it doesn't, why does he hold me accountable? To say, I wish you painted a tree the way you did 10 years ago, is to wish me forever in bondage to one moment of my life. Would I sentence him to read or write the same book over and over? There is so much more in us than we shall have words or lines to speak. Yet the better acquainted we come with what lies down there, the farther behind we fall in expressing it. Thank God eternity awaits us, and you will be there to show us how to use it.
This is really true. After every show, everybody comes up and says, won't you paint me a picture like 1964? And it's really hard. I would rather just quit. It's just hard to do the same thing over and over again. So this is well said. And maybe I'm going downhill from 1964, but that's all right. It's going somewhere. This is a painting I made when I was here. I was on leave in 71, 72, and our family lived here. I painted in Narnia until it got too cold, but it was a great, really productive year. I did a lot of painting, and then when it got too cold, I went up to the shop and did a lot of welding.
And you skied.
Yes, I mostly skied. Every weekend, we went on an overnight to some dangerous place where we almost got killed by avalanches. I'm not sure I know exactly what is going on here, but it's that same kind of bursting form that was in the crown, and these same kinds of shapes that were in that Concerto Grosso, and maybe it has something to do with trees or patterns. I won't try to explain it. But Bobby wrote a general... I also made it for Ginny Witt. And we all wished that when Elmer accepted the position here that Ginny could have come with him. But Ginny died just moments before he was to start his work here. And I'm sure Elmer is still in the grieving process. But maybe this painting will help him come out of it. But anyway, it was for Ginny.
It's called Holden Whispers. Sitting within the silent confines of our sacred winter community, we listened to Bach one evening, pondering the differences among us, some delightful, some disturbing and disruptive. I doodled the disparities, comparing them to the nature that surrounded and isolated us. Snow piled up in magnificent and magical layers, each snowflake capable of causing endless wonder. Then an avalanche brought down tons of it, destroying all in its path, but providing a slope for the bloom of next spring's delicate avalanche lily. As I sketched, I gave sharp edges to hard words that jabbed and poked during winter's isolation, and remembered beautiful healing moments which never could have occurred without such brutal honesty. Here are the whispers of Holden remembered, not all sweet and comforting, but like this Bach, if we hear what's really meant, dissonance will bring forth truth like the touch of gold on this canvas.